so much. All right, I am Nicole Sandler here at Netroots Nation. Maybe I can cajole Marcus Melitzas to step up to the microphone. Oh, yes. Oh, come on over, Brad. We are streaming live on Ustream. Marcus Melitzas, of course, the founder of Daily Kos. And you are the guy, I was just talking to Raven about it, who basically started this. This used to be the yearly Kos gathering.
I didn't do it.
No? Oh, you
damn
didn't do it.
Thing about...
Really?
I mean, Daily Kos was founded by a bunch of people in the Daily Kos community. So, yeah,
uh-huh.
I created the site
right.
that brought these people together who then created this. But I got to say, from year one, there were a bunch of amateurs in the non-negative sort of way, right? These people who had never run conferences or put together a conference.
Right.
They just felt really passionate about mm-hmm. what they were doing. They wanted to come together and meet in person because they loved the site, they loved the people, they felt passionate about the causes that we talk about. And so they decided to put this conference in Vegas, and I still remember the first time I walked in, I really expected them to say, like, okay, the conference is down the hall, take a left at the water cooler, take a right by the vending uh-huh. machine, and that back room,
right.
that's a conference. And I would have been thrilled if that had been the conference, but you walk into what was a real conference, and the best... everybody, of course, gives me credit. You know, I did nothing.
Well, your name is on it.
Which
know?
Was sort of, yeah, which kind of confusing to people. And we, I made sure that got changed eventually. But what was, I thought the best compliment we got is a New York Times reporter pulled me aside and said, you know, I've been going to these conferences for 20 years, and this is the first liberal conference I've ever been to where every session started on time.
Wow.
And so I thought, look, you know, if we're talking about a people power movement where people know better than the so-called experts who claim to speak for all of us, I mean, what better example than a bunch of so-called amateurs putting on a conference that was more professional and well-run than what the actual professionals put together?
There you go. Well, because, you know what, the thing is, we're at an event where everybody who's here is passionate about what they do, and we're all connected with the same... goal.
It's like passion overload, you know.
It definitely is. You're right.
The compliment came from the New York Times, was it?
Yeah.
So we have to take that with a grain of salt.
Now, joining us is Brad Friedman. Now, Marcos, have you met Brad before?
Yep.
Okay.
We have met. Actually, in Vegas was the last time. I think it was Blog World a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I only ever see Marcos in Vegas.
I see.
That's right. But and I have some. I told you. I promised a tough question
yeah,
or two,
so,
if I could.
Right.
Or two. I promise one.
Okay. Oh,
I
no,
don't know if I can handle
no follow-ups, Mr. Bush.
Wow.
All right, fine. Okay.
Tough
here's
question.
The. I have a lot of people that are very angry with you on my blog, because of your site having in your front pages. Having banned people for years because discussing election fraud issues and so forth, voting machine issues. Now, recently, and here comes the tough question, recently, with your Research 2K problems with those surveys, you said, and this is a quote that, or close as I can remember it, that it was because you released the raw data that the fraud in those polls was discovered in the first place. Because you were able to get at that data and because statisticians were able to look at that raw data, that's why you discovered the fraud. Do you see the irony there?
If you stretch and pull and tug you know, tug at it really well, then maybe you can sort of make the analogy. The analogy is that the people that have been pulled from Daily Kos, have been banned from Daily Kos, are people who have alleged things that cannot be proven. It's a lack of fact. You know, it's conspiracy theories. We do not uh-huh. allow conspiracy theories. It's a lack of proof. So making a claim, the people that were banned in 2004 were banned for claiming that there was fraud in the 2004 election, that Bush won Ohio via fraud. There's no evidence of that.
Well, there's actually...
There is no evidence.
There is quite a bit of evidence that there was fraud. Whether it was
no.
enough to win or not,
there's
we don't know because it wouldn't let us get to the raw data.
I mean, the issue of closing polling places, not having enough polling machines at different locations, in low-income neighborhoods. While if you went to the suburbs...
Stickers on ballots that over-Kerry's name,
whiting
out
Kerry's
name.
Stuff like that, but that wasn't the issue. The issue was sort of the blanket claim that Bush had stolen the election without actually having... actionable evidence that would prove that Bush stole the election. And Bush did not. We lost that election fair and square. Not in 2000. 2000, they stole the election
yeah.
in 2000.
Okay.
2004.
Ohio.
Well, actually, let me follow that up, because I know you feel that way, and you might be right. The problem is we don't know, because as with your surveys, we still don't have the raw data. Now, if somebody had said 6 months ago that your surveys, the R2 Research 2000 surveys, were fraudulent, and they said that on Daily Kos, would you ban them because they didn't have the evidence? Instead, all they had at that point before the raw data was out was they were able to look at it and say, wait a minute, something's not right here. We have cursory evidence that it's inaccurate.
The evidence was always available. The numbers were there to look at. So if you're going to say these numbers are, I wouldn't ban them. I wouldn't, you know, anytime there's been any kind of ban on Daily Kos, it's been after 6 months of sort of like, prove it. It's never been a knee-jerk reaction. Even after the London 2 bombings, there was another purge at that point. People were claiming the Mossad had something to do with the London. You know, I gave them about a month, you know, and that was a month too long, in my opinion.
Right, and then eventually you do have to take control. I get that.
There's a point.
But, Brad, so you were never banned from Daily Kos for stuff you were writing, right?
I never signed up for Daily Kos. I've never written there because of this, because it's sort of a personal quiet boycott, because I just felt it was inappropriate to do that. And when this happened with the Research 2000, and you said this about the raw data, I mean, do you really not understand the irony there? You really think this is a stretch to say that, well, the reason we have questions about these elections year after year after year now is because they have privatized the data. They've concealed the tabulation, the counting. We can't get at that raw data that was used to discover that your surveys were fraudulent. That's the problem that we have. You really don't.
I mean, you clearly have your cause and your issue, and you feel very passionate about it. People are free to discuss this stuff if they do so from a reality-based perspective. If they're examining where the holes are and what could be plugged, that's one thing. To make an allegation, blanket allegation, and assert it as fact and unable to prove it makes a mockery of the notion that we are a reality-based community. If you're talking about specific action items that could be done to ascertain the efficacy of voting results, that's a whole different story, and that's not going to get you banned from Daily Kos. Coming in and saying it was Bush stole the election, and it's a fact that he stole the election, even though there's no real evidence that he stole the election.
But how would I prove your polls were fraudulent?
Things are proven all the time. Things are proven. You do what you do.
How would I prove your polls were fraudulent if I didn't have that raw data to look at it and say, wait a minute, something's wrong?
Ask Nate Silver how he proved that strategic vision was fraudulent without that kind of raw data. It can be done. I mean, if you have the skills and the ability, and you dig in, but you're looking at two different things.
But we're also dealing with the Republican Party and the Bush administration, and you know, things they want to hide, they're going to be able to hide. So there might be no way to get at it unless we can get, you know, the actual raw data from the voting machines, which we can't get.
We've privatized the voting machines. Yeah. And that's absolutely insane to have these concealed vote cuttings, and it's not even, you know, dirty Republicans. It's dirty anybody.
Right.
If the citizens can't oversee their own elections, how can you have self-governance?
But there's an action component. I mean, Daily Kos was obviously very behind Deborah Bowen in California.
Yeah.
And she ran on a lot of these issues.
Right.
So there's an action component to it, and there's a claiming things that cannot be proven. And like I said, if you repeatedly on Daily Kos engage in conspiracy theories, I'm not saying what you're doing is conspiracy theories. I'm saying the people who were banned from Daily Kos were engaging in conspiracy theories.
I don't want to do that.
And they're not necessarily you. What you're doing is a whole different thing. So you take it personally. When it has nothing to do with you, really.
I don't take it personally. It's concerning.
And I would have to go back and look at exactly what these people were alleging, because that happened a long time ago. Clearly, you've spewed on it for a long time. I haven't. I've moved on a long time ago.
I mean, this is one of his main issue is election discrepancies. It's not voter fraud, but election fraud. And it's the problem with these touchscreen voting machines that are truly flawed, and it's the proprietary mechanisms that that we can't get at, and that's not how we should be voting.
But we've been moving forward. I mean, you know, we were very supportive of the Secretary of State project, you know, to get a bunch of Democratic Secretary of State elected in a lot of states, in large part because of these issues on access to the polls.
But Marcos, look what happened in South Carolina. Look at Alvin Green. Why do you think that happened? Vic Rawl would have been banned from Daily Kos because he spent 5 hours with a protest saying it was due to the voting machines that he didn't have evidence for because it wouldn't let him have
it. But you're saying he would have been banned if he came on every day and continuously posted
months.
The same things over and over again without any evidence to back up his claims.
But
now you, but you do have evidence. I mean, you get what you can. It's still not the numbers. You're not getting the information from the voting machines. But you do investigative journalism. You're probably banning people who just say, "Well, I just know it. Yeah, I know it's a conspiracy. They stole the election, and I'm right, and you're wrong."
Well, Dana Houle, your front pager, was not doing that.
And there's a lot of people bringing up the same facts that have been. Already disputed or proven wrong. Because a lot of times, you know, you throw out some theories.
Have been refuted?
Yeah, refuted. You throw out some theories, and, okay, the theories are refuted because the evidence comes to light, right? And people using the same, and this is Republicans do it all the time, right? They just pull out whatever crazy Republican lies that they invent. Oh, Obama's the first president to use the teleprompter.
Right.
Not really, but they keep saying it over and over and over again.
So when
people are using facts that are like, no, that's already been, you know, refuted 30 times, you know, do we need to keep going over the same territory over and over again? Give us something new to work
the
with.
The same territory.
And again, I think you're sort of replacing yourself into what other people were doing and taking their word for why they were banned without really knowing exactly what was being alleged
and
what was being argued.
I've seen it alleged by your front pager, who used to be a pseudonymous, a DH in MI, Dana Houle.
Yeah, you're holding like these incredible grudges.
Dana Houle. Well, this is an incredible grudge, Marcus, because this is our goddamn democracy.
You view it that way.
I have given you the evidence. I gave you evidence in New Hampshire. And you got guys like Dana Houle calling me a conspiracy theorist and a nutter and people who are looking in and trying to investigate
this
stuff.
The New Hampshire stuff was completely refuted. Are you talking about the 2008 Democratic primary?
What was refuted about it?
What you were alleging.
What was I alleging?
I don't remember, but I remember seeing...
I was alleging that no ballots were counted by hand by any human being in anything but 40% of New Hampshire where Obama had won. In the other 60%, all counted by Diebold, Hillary Clinton won.
And I think that was proven wrong. I remember that was actually accurate.
And all I said was, before you decide if the polls were wrong, has anybody checked to see if the ballots were counted correctly? That was it. There was no conspiracy. There was no saying Hillary Clinton stole the election. But you had a guy who used to work for a New Hampshire congressman, and which he didn't let a lot of people know, out there
charging. It was in a freaking about page. You don't know how to click an about page, then the problem isn't
Actually, your about page is only available from the front page. It's not available from his story pages.
The about page is a click that says about Daily Coast. And it has a writer
it's
bio.
It's only on the front page, and it didn't have his name. But in any case, the point is...
You're an investigative reporter. You don't know how to click the about page?
No, when I found out who he was, when I gave a damn, I looked up and I found out who he was.
Okay,
but
so
he was not disclosing that while he
disclosed.
Was...
It's on the about page.
It was not disclosed.
Okay, all right. Now, Brad Friedman, Marcus Melitz is here with us. You said there were two questions.
That was the second one.
All right, well, I'll ask you about that. I don't want to get you in trouble because I think you're right. You know, you've been he's talking about banning people from Daily Coast. You've been basically banned from MSNBC, unless the ban has been lifted.
I doubled down on it. I don't. They want me to apologize to Joe Scarborough because he's a wilting flower and he's got a fainting couch on his office because, oh, my God, somebody tweeted something mean.
I followed the whole thing. I've got Twitter up on my thing now. No, so Joe Scarborough was offended because – tell us what happened here.
Well, Joe Scarborough, back in the early 2000s, not even Joe Scarborough. In the early 2000s, many of you might remember a guy named Gary Condit who had a intern disappear from his office, and basically the media tried and convicted him all at once of that murder. So they camped out in front of his house, you know, they accused him of all sorts of heinous things.
Chandra Levy, right?
Yeah, Chandra Levy. He was basically, you know, it turns out that he had nothing to do with her murder, but he was hounded from polite society, never to be seen again. At that exact same time, literally at the exact same time, a staffer of Joe Scarborough's ended up dying under very mysterious, you know, very young, just apparently just passed out and had her head conked on the desk in his office at the exact same time. The medical examiner's office completely sort of whitewashed it. Nobody ever knew what really happened.
This was in Pensacola, Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
Are
at the time...
Pensacola?
No, I'm from Miami.
So you didn't do it.
No, I didn't.
At the time, Scarborough wasn't...
I was in L.A.
...wasn't in Florida, right? So, I mean...
He couldn't have done it.
He could not have done it.
Right.
But the point is that it was very mysterious circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talked about this mysterious staffer that died in Scarborough's office while Gary Condit was being hounded from Polite Society.
Right.
In fact, Joe Scarborough ended up getting a show on MSNBC and sort of moving up in the world. So the issue here, and again, Gary Condit didn't kill the intern.
Right.
I've never said that Joe Scarborough killed. But under the it was very similar circumstances, and you had a situation where the media treated both of them differently. And why did they treat them differently? There's only one obvious
solution. Gary Condit was a Democrat, and Joe Scarborough was a Republican.
Right. This is not very difficult.
No.
So, you know, back in 2005, there was rumors that Scarborough might be running for Senate, and I talked about, well, you know, here are some things that may come up if he runs for office. You know, he had a messy divorce,
mm-hmm.
And he also had this, you know, this dead staffer issue. Here's the official explanation, which was sort of, you know, she passed out, and it was a fluke accident or whatever. And here's, like, the tinfoil conspiracy theory version.
Right.
And, you know, when you call something the tinfoil conspiracy theory version, I mean, you're not saying that's the right.
Right.
I mean, I don't mean tinfoil conspiracy in a positive way.
Of course not. You would have used different.
You know, and I saw Scarborough in the green room of Meet the Press back in December, and we had a chummy talk, and everything seemed to be okay, and he invited me on his show, and I pretended to agree because I would never go on a stupid show. Suddenly, you know, about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, he's on Twitter complaining about the coverage of the Joe Sestak non-story. Look at that. We're going to finish each other's sentences. And he's freaking out, right, because this is like the worst thing to ever have happened, that, well, the White House offered him a non-paying advisory commission committee role if he didn't run again. Which is so, you know, if they offered him the real job with paying, I mean, in the scheme, I mean, they all do it. Reagan did it, Bush did it, you know, both Bushes did it. I mean, this is normal, and in the scheme of, like, dirty politics, that doesn't rate anywhere near any level of concern. So, you know, he's going on for hours, right? So finally, he tweets something, and I forget what the exact tweet was, but it's sort of like there's a media double standard, right? And I tweeted back, like a dead intern, like a certain dead intern. Now, I was factually incorrect because she wasn't an intern. She was a staffer.
Ooh.
So, but instead of correcting my facts, which were wrong at the time, I broke him. He snapped. He absolutely snapped. And you see, he came back and said, I accused him of murder 3 or 4 times and what was wrong with me. And it's, first of all, you know, I actually went back on
He said 3 or 4 times.
Three or four times.
You accuse him of murder? Or that
he said that Marcos accused him of murder 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. Okay. And I thought that was weird. And actually, I had to go back and do my research thinking, well, maybe I slipped. It was that one post.
Wow.
And I just hung out with him, talking all chummy in the green room of Meet the Press in December. I mean, somebody's accused me of murder 3 or 4 times. I'm not going to be acting all friendly to them when I run into them anywhere.
Yeah, right.
And,
but he's a politician.
So people, of course, on Twitter are like, wow, he did. How about some links? And I'm like, yeah, how about some links?
Right.
But there were no links, right? He completely had lost it. So clearly, he then tweeted something along the lines, well, if you have Marcos on TV, you know, clearly you're having on somebody who's accusing me of murder, which was a message to Keith Olbermann and Ed Schultz, who I was on 2-3 times a week. Suddenly, I go from 2-3 times a week on MSNBC, and I got to tell you, I don't like going on television. So to me, it wasn't.
Radio's better.
what has Olbermann or Schultz's?
Where was I? Oh, so 2-3-0, right? So finally, I email Phil Griffin, who's the president of MSNBC, and he's like, "Well, you know, you said mean things about him, and he's, can you work it out with him?" Which, what do you mean by working out with him? And he's like, "Well, can you talk to him?" I'm like, what do you mean talk to him?
Apologize.
Well, can you apologize to him? I was like, for what? I didn't accuse. He accused me of accusing him of murder. That itself is a scurrilous accusation. Accuse somebody of going around accusing people of murder.
Right.
And so I said, okay, you got 2 weeks to work it out, and because you know this is really ridiculous. Otherwise, I'm going to write about it. And 2 weeks happened, and of course, there was no movement. And I wrote email to say, you know, I'm going to write about it. So I want a statement. I mean, why are you Joe Scarborough's bitch? I mean, why?
Good for you.
And he wrote back, you know, which I posted on Daily Coast, you know, basically admitting that I was blacklisted. And saying that I had brought it onto myself, and it's like, because we're talking like, you know, 13 characters on Twitter, right?
Right.
And to me, it was so patently absurd, and I don't really want to be on there. But then, you know, I start looking into Phil Griffin, and you realize this is a guy that hired Oliver North to, you know, at MSNBC back in the day. He's the guy that fired Phil Donahue when Phil Donahue had the highest rated show on MSNBC post 9/11 because he wrote in a memo, or a memo he commissioned, that the fact that Phil Donahue criticized Bush and brought on anti-war guests reflected poorly on the network.
Oh, my
this
God.
Is Phil Griffin. Phil Griffin is also the guy that brought on Mark Halperin. He obviously hired Joel Scarborough. Mark Halperin's a guy.
As their senior political analyst. I mean, they've got some decent people on that network as political analysts. But Mark Halperin, who
is
the biggest right-wing shill out there.
He wrote. He said at a conference after the 2008 election that the media's treatment of Obama and the bias they showed towards Obama was the biggest media failure since the Iraq War. This is a guy that's now the senior. 70% of his appearances are on Scarborough. He's basically on there because Scarborough wanted it on him.
Right.
And you look into it, and you know, I've got to interrupt.
I'm so glad you brought up Mark Halperin, because I don't hear anybody talking about it. And this is a recent development. This is just in the last month or two that he was named their senior political analyst. And are they trying to turn MSNBC into the next Fox?
They want to. And here's where you asked about Olbermann and Rachel. Keep in mind that these guys may be the highest rated shows on the network. They may be bringing in all the money. So was Phil Donahue when he got fired, right? They're walking on eggshells. They realize the network is still owned by GE.
Right. And their daytime lineup, and I watch it during the day because I sit in my studio and get ready for my show, which comes on at 6, and I'll just have it on in the background because it's better than, you know, it's like lesser of all evils.
Yeah.
But more and more I'm seeing a very right-wing bias filtering into the rest of their programming, with the exception of Ed Schultz, Rachel, and Keith.
And when you look at the prime time, I mean, Keith Olbermann wasn't a Phil Griffin hire. I mean,
he was there before.
Yeah, he came in before. I mean, Phil Griffin was he was shuffled around.
Right.
He was like a director of programming before he became president. But he basically inherited Olbermann. Olbermann brought in Rachel Maddow, and by all reports, internal reports, Phil Griffin didn't want Rachel Maddow. It's just that Keith had enough pull to be able to bring her in. Obviously, she's been very successful. And here's sort of the punchline is that Comcast is about to buy NBC Universal. And when they do, they're going to sweep in and they're going to make changes in all the different properties. They're going to put in their people. And this is Phil Griffin's last bit, because really Morning Joe is the only show that he can claim he really put a stamp on. He's put all his money into it, all his credibility. I mean, they're desperately trying to talk about how much buzz it creates in D.C. because it is the lowest ranked morning show on cable news amongst the advertising demo, the money that they pay for. It's below headline news. And when you're below headline news, you suck at it.
And as somebody who, you know, is a political news junkie, I can't watch that show. I can't.
It's painful.
And I try. It is painful. And Mika is probably worse than Joe.
So the question for the record, just because I feel like I have to ask, and by the way, I have no love for MSNBC. I've been on Fox, I've been on CNN, never been on MSNBC, so I'm boycotted along with you there, apparently, or blackballed. So the question is, have Ed or Rachel or Keith responded to you? If you can't answer it, I understand, but have they given you their opinion on this?
I can't answer to who I talk to and what we talk about. But I can say this, is that when you're the president of the network and you have somebody like me who's a frequent guest and obviously very friendly with their primetime lineup going after them, if they thought I was doing the wrong thing, they would publicly, or even privately, and I'd say if they did, they'd say, you know, Marcos, back off, you're in the wrong.
Right.
None of them have done that.
You think you'll be back?
When Phil Griffin is gone.
When's he gone?
When Comcast takes over.
All right.
And then let's hope that Keith and Rachel are still there.
It's from everything I've heard, and again, it could all be bullshit, and I can't tell you who I talk to, but everything I hear is that Comcast realizes where the money's being made, and they're interested in making money.
Good.
They're not interested in a political agenda, which is more of what GE
Good. You know, then maybe they will turn it into the liberal network that it could be, and I don't want to say our counterpart to Fox, because just like you talked about this being a reality-based community, they're pure fiction over there. And but you know, give our point of view. Give us an outlet.
Well,
I mean,
reality has a well-known liberal bias. So
yes,
we just
you're right. Well, my problem with radio, though, I mean, my background is I did music radio forever, and then I got into political talk, and the station I was at in Miami, owned by Clear Channel, they flipped to the fifth sports station in the market, and then I went to Air America, did nights there, and of course then they went under. But there are so few progressive talk stations on so-called terrestrial radio because they're all owned by the Clear Channels and Viacoms, and
the Democrats aren't doing anything about it.
And they're not.
They're not. And
what could they do about it, though?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Obama on January 20th, 2009, on the White House website, when they flipped it to the new website, had a paragraph on there about reviewing the media ownership, diversity in the media, and so forth. By summer, that paragraph had been removed.
I gotta say,
they gave up on the war before they.
I have very libertarian roots, you know, and believe it or not, but it's a different, not the crazy Rand Paul crap,
okay.
Right? It's more sort of like I see corporations as an evil, and I generally want people to stay out of my way, but corporations won't, and government's the only counterweight to these corporations. So therefore, I actually trust government more than I trust corporations.
I do too,
but
right.
I still want people out of my way as much as possible. It's just not always possible. And then I caveat so much that it makes a mockery of the notion that I might be actually libertarian. But I still like, but it, things like this. We are building an alternate media infrastructure right now, and I think technology has enabled that. I don't think government needs to get involved to level the playing field. I think we're actually working towards leveling the playing field right now.
Well, with the internet, maybe, but over the airwaves, no. And until the transmitters go away and everything is on the internet, then we have to worry about net neutrality. Because if they
net neutrality is an issue.
And because then they'll still control the internet waves.
But it's a gradual evolution. I mean, keep in mind that the right wing spent 30 years building the machine that they have now, right? I mean, we can't expect to build ours in 8 years since 2002.
But they built it on our airwaves, and they're still using our airwaves.
And those airwaves are licensed in the public interest, convenience, and necessity.
Right.
Now, I understand Faux News is a cable outlet, but how they can get away with putting out pure lies, as in the case with the Shirley Sherrod video, and call it news and not be sanctioned in some way,
that's scary. I mean, you sanction them by hopefully calling out, hurting their credibility. Of course, they're immune to mockery and accountability, so it makes it a little tougher. But to me, the notion that government would somehow start sanctioning content it's scary.
No, it's not about the content, though.
It's about honesty. It's about truthiness, you know?
Well, to me, it's leave Russia on
territory.
3 hours a day, 5 days a week, but put Hartman on for 3 hours a day. Put Nicole on.
Well, please, I need a job.
That's why,
we had that. We had Air America, and Air America failed.
Because Acorn, it
because it was run like absolutely.
It was run
crap.
Horribly.
It was run poorly, but that's not
had
why
it been
it failed.
But had it run well? Would things have been different?
No,
because Clear Channel owns 1,200 radio stations, and in the markets where they will put a progressive talk station on, it's when they have at least two AM signals. They'll put the so-called conservative talker, which is not conservative at all because it's Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, and that's
right-wing
not conservative. Right. It's right-wing nutjob talk. And they'll put the progressive talker on the station with the lousy signal, with no promotional dollars, with no support. And so it's not an equal footing. We don't have the same opportunities to get on radio stations. There is the latest figures I heard, 9 hours of right-wing talk to every 1 hour of progressive talk. And the reason I can't get another syndication deal is because there aren't enough stations that carry this kind of programming. It's not because the demand's not there. It's because in the cities we're not on in so many cities. You can drive through state after state after state, and in many cities hear Rush Limbaugh on two or three stations and not hear a progressive voice.
On the other hand, we're using new technology now to expand our audience and to build an audience in a medium that I think is better suited in a lot of ways to progressives who like to argue and fight and bicker, and they're not as
among ourselves.
Yeah, we're not as open to a Rush Limbaugh voice telling us what to think, which is the right is
but
actually.
We don't have to. We're talking about millions of listeners, in their cars. That's how they get away with this Acorn crap, this Shirley Sherrod crap, because they hear this stuff pounded into them. And if you put them up side by side, Stephanie Miller will tell you that she's on head to head with Laura Ingraham in the morning, she beats her. And yet, Stephanie is on something like 40 affiliates, and Ingram, the crazy Ingram, is on like 400 stations. It's not about competition.
We don't have 400 progressive talk stations, period. We have about 60 of them. There's Shannon. We have about 60 of them.
That's why we're building an alternate infrastructure.
Well, and that's why I do my show online. Yeah. But the problem is now generating dollars. You know, it's not there yet.
It's a challenge. Yeah.
I know, but we'll get there.
But
that's why it is a long
term. And to me, that's why it's always been about building an alternate infrastructure, because the existing infrastructure clearly isn't friendly to our interests. So we use technology to work around those bottlenecks.
But we have Democrats in office. Why are they doing something about it? They run the FCC.
Well, Democrats can't create a corporation.
Hold on. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 is the, you know, I'm sorry. I personally actually like Bill Clinton, but that was his biggest fuck up ever. It destroyed this industry. And you know, you're a radio guy. I've been in radio. There's Shannon Moore. Yeah, she knows too. I have been in radio for, I hate to admit it, almost 30 years, over 30 years. And it destroyed my industry. I mean, talk about a job killer. And Bill Clinton, I guess last year at this gathering, even admitted it was a big mistake. He was misled. They could roll that back. The Democrats could
Even pass things that are popular.
Well, exactly. That's the problem.
Are you kidding me?
That's the problem. But ownership rules, localism, I mean, again, radio stations are licensed to serve in the public interest, convenience, and necessity, and nine out of ten of them don't have any local programming at all.
Yep.
You know, I'll use Michael Jackson as an example. Michael Jackson dies, I think it was a Friday. So many radio stations are voice tracked from out of market. Those stations didn't even mention it till Monday because the voice tracks were in for the weekend already. I mean, that's wrong.
There was
and
the toxic
on the other
cloud
hand, on the other hand, everybody else was talking about Michael Jackson, so it wasn't like there was any dearth.
But when it comes
it's radio. But
you're focusing
on
radio specific. Well, I took the broader picture. I look at technologies transforming not just, you know, from video to text. To voice, you know, the internet creates an alternate infrastructure. So to me, say, well, some stations didn't carry Michael Jackson. I say, so what? Because everybody else carried Michael Jackson.
True,
not a great example. Minot, South Dakota, a toxic cloud came in. There was a train spill. The sky started getting black. All of the stations were owned by Clear Channel. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. Toxic, choking clouds. People could not breathe. And there was nobody local to do it. They were all running it out of Texas, killing people because they gave away the local media under the
usually on weekends, I live in Miami, on weekends you can hear me on a very cool radio station in Des Moines, Capital 106.3, that I voice track from my home studio on Wednesday nights, Thursday mornings. I mean, that shouldn't happen. I mean, it really shouldn't. But anyway, it's there, and it's there because of Bill Clinton. But at least he admits that he's
screwed up. And it's not undone because the Democrats have run from this fight
They can't do the popular stuff. They're not going to even remotely get to anything more
But I think it would be popular, except the right-wing noise machine is louder than ours.
No, exactly.
But that noise machine, they've spent 30 years building. That's why they're louder, because they've spent 30 years building a machine, and we haven't. We just now started really investing in the infrastructure. And Air America was part of that investment, and it was a failure, but doesn't mean it's a last investment.
Okay, I've got an idea for you. How about Daily Coast Radio? And we could do a live radio thing right there on Daily Coast and use, you know, your diarist and your bloggers and do
we have the Brad stuff. And Dana Hool Hour. Can we get him to
you and your grudges.
It's
only democracy, dude.
We can talk off the air about that. But no, this is what I have my radioornot.com site, but that's just little old me from my doing my thing. But I think we sort of need to work together and build networks and take advantage of the big blogs like Daily Coast or like Fire Dog Lake or Crooks and Liars and build this thing.
It's a long term process, absolutely. And we're looking to invest in it. We're looking to expand. The economics of radio are very poor.
Yeah.
Especially you got Clear Channel's economies of scale, I guess, which is what allows them to survive. But even they're having. I mean, they're having some troubles, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
paid so much money for these towers that are worthless now.
So the economy of it is what I think is almost a bigger problem at this point.
They also spent $400 million on Rush.
If you didn't hear, Brad said they also spent $400 million on Rush. And how many millions on Glenn Beck?
Hopefully a lot. So
yeah, and then they wonder why they have problems. we got no money left. What happened?
But I mean, there's a lot of questions. But, you know, again, conservatives spent 30 years to get to where they are today with their machine. You know, we just started really building us in the early 2000s in any real organized fashion in the mid-2000s. Because 2002, when I had my dinky blog, it wasn't necessarily the beginning of a vast left-wing conspiracy on the media landscape. It was me railing at the nothingness out there. It's clear, we've as a medium, we're growing. As a movement, we're growing. I mean, Netroots Nation itself is sort of a sign of how we are maturing and growing as a movement. And as we do, you know, we got to build these pieces. But we got to remember, conservatives spent 30 years to get from 64 to 94 when he took over Congress. 30 years to get there. We got a gift from the Republicans, and we were able to take Congress sooner, which actually, I think, raised expectations because our infrastructure is nowhere near that of the right wing, and we're still building that.
But we own that infrastructure, and if there's any message to bring back, these are the
people's
airwaves.
But that's not
all.
Fox News has nothing to do with the airwaves. Fox News is cable, and Fox News is probably even bigger factor in their ability.
But I think you're misunderestimating, the effect of Hannity, Beck, all these guys on the radio.
And
they still succeed.
What Fox News does is they amplify what happens on, you know, on a lot of the right-wing blogs and what happens on talk radio, because it's when it's on TV that the rest of the traditional media picks it up and treats it as reality. So take Fox News out of that equation, and they're a lot poorer off, not financially, but poorer off in their ability to push their message into the traditional media. So they've got this really well-oiled machine. We don't have a Fox News. And even if MSNBC turns into, quote, our version of Fox News, it wouldn't be our version of Fox News
because it wouldn't be
a partisanized.
Real, right.
I mean, yeah, it might be progressive in nature, but what Fox News does
is
an arm of the conservative movement in a way that MSNBC never can
be. The right wing movement. Again, conservative is
it's
semantic thing. They're not really conservatives.
Well, of course not. But
and
they call it
conservative. The point is that these are our public airwaves. They're limited in the way that our national parks are limited, and we ought to be protecting them for the public use, and we're not doing that. We've sold them off to the highest bidder, and it's killing us.
When I started in radio, I actually majored in broadcasting in college, and there used to be a thing called, where you have to go, ascertainment. You had to go out in the community and find the 10 most important issues facing your community. You had to meet with community leaders and do this whole ascertainment file and prove in your FCC file that you were addressing these 10 major needs of your community. That all disappeared. That disappeared with the Fairness Doctrine. That disappeared with the Telecommunications Act. And it's a shame because, you know, radio, and I am addressing radio here, should be a local medium, and it isn't. It turned into this, you know, piped in, you know, Clear Channel. The problem they're going to have when the transmitters go away is all their local properties are going to be worthless. Right now, they should be nurturing and building new talent and branding each of them with their own website and their own show. But because what they're putting all their money in is Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, when the stations go away, that's all they'll have.
Instead of
having 1,200 different things.
But that also speaks to why it's hard for progressives to make the investment in building that terrestrial radio network, because it's dated. I mean, it's a limited.
It is, and it's going to go away soon. It's very expensive
to build, and it's not going to stick around for a while.
No, and if Clear Channel wanted to sell off those signals now, it would be pennies on the dollar for what they paid for them.
So we're in a we're in a transitional phase right now, and so to me our priority is to make sure that we maintain our advantage in this world. Because we do have an advantage, and continue to invest in this world.
Right.
Because and this feeds into everything. It feeds into radio and video and the print. You know, where I am at, it's the printed word, which is, you know, my medium is the printed word.
Right.
It's the online world. I don't have to worry about creating a magazine. You know, the magazine world is dying.
Yes,
you know,
it is. The newspaper world is dying.
You know,
no,
we're growing.
Exactly.
So it's transitional, but it puts us at a. I won't say short term because we've been at a disadvantage for a while now.
Yes.
But at least I get the sense that we're starting to build what will eventually be a counterweight. And in a way, I mean, they've invested so much in this sort of bricks and mortar investment that they may actually end up at a their own disadvantage
yes.
at some point.
Oh,
but
yeah.
that's like my pipe dream. And
I know, and then it's still 10 years off. But, you
yeah.
know, hopefully, in the next few years, you know, you'll have a little computer thing in your dashboard, and you can listen to just internet radio just by clicking a button like you can with your car radio now, and that's what we need. And once that happens...
Which I do already with my iPhone.
Right.
So this
exactly.
is my free advertisement.
But once
for,
that gets right. in your car
I
dashboard,
highly recommend it. Yeah.
Once that's in your car dashboard, the entire landscape changes. Now we just have to work for net neutrality.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, we're screwed again.
We're pretty much effed.
Yes. In fact, Tim Carr from freepress.net stopped by when I was out. He's been on the show many times, and I'll have to text him and tell him to head on over here, and because that is such an important issue right now.
Undoubtedly.
Yes, I know Shannon's over there. We'll get her, too. Marcos, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure meeting
Thanks.
You, and we'll be in touch.
Yep, absolutely.